Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And as always, I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby Neer. And unfortunately, we don't have Dave with us today, but maybe he'll stop by later on. But we do have Bobby Neer and Robert. So hi, guys. Good afternoon
Hello.
To you.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hello. Join
and
this
so,
hot weather.
Oh, I know. All over the place. All over the place. I love it, though. So, you know, I love hot weather. That's perfect summer for me. But today we are talking about the episode The Prime Mover. And so we are going to turn this over right now to Robert for his opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Portrait of a man who thinks and thereby gets things done. Mr. Jimbo Cobb might be called a prime mover, a talent which has to be seen to be believed. In just a moment, he'll show his friends and you how he keeps both feet on the ground and his head in the Twilight Zone.
Thank you, Robert. And yes, that is the great opening clip for The Prime Mover. And it's the story of two men, Ace Larson and Jimmy Cobb, they're the co-owners of a small country diner. And, of course, it's also the story of Ace Larson's lovely girlfriend, Kitty. And one day there's a terrible car accident outside of the diner. And the car flips over onto some live electrical wires. So Jimbo knows that the passengers in the car will die if he doesn't do something. So he closes his eyes and flips the car off the wires with his mind. His friend Ace sees this amazing ability that Jimbo has, and after begging him to show him a few examples of what he can do, he tells Jimbo and Kitty that they're sitting on a gold mine. Well, actually, he tells Jimbo that they're sitting on a gold mine. And so he decides to drag Jimbo and Kitty to Las Vegas so he can use Jimbo's psychic ability to become a millionaire. So after he wins a boatload of money, Ace is still not satisfied. So Kitty, she's disgusted with how greedy he's becoming, and she goes home. She leaves and goes home by herself. And Jimbo, he's getting terrible headaches from using this ability so much, and he wants to leave. But Ace convinces him to help him for one more day, so he goes one more day to help him, and Ace goes one-on-one with a Chicago mobster who's also a high-rolling gambler. And he also takes up with a blonde, gold-digging cigarette girl. So he goes in the room with the gangster and some of the gangster's friends, and after beating the gangster every roll of dice, Jimbo has finally had enough of Ace's greedy ways and the way he's cheating on Kitty. So when Ace decides to go for broke and throw all the money on the floor and go for everything, Jimbo does not turn the dice in his favor, and Ace loses everything. Jimbo tells Ace, he blew his fuse. He said, I blew a fuse. I couldn't do it anymore. But in reality, he just wanted Ace to come to his senses and go home to Kitty. So he does, and he proposes to her, and she accepts. And ta-da, end of story. Well, I was born, raised, and I lived most of my life in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which meant I was a stone's throw away from Atlantic City, New Jersey, and the excitement of the casinos. And I remember when the first casino opened in 1978. It was a Resorts Casino Hotel. And since then, I've paid quite a few visits to the casinos over the years. And I know how easy it is to catch the gambling bug. Now, luckily, I never got sucked into the trap like so many others do, but it's very tempting. I've gambled and won, lost and broke even, and sometimes I've just lost and lost. Yeah, I would go down there sometimes with $200 and say, okay, you know, this is $200. I'm going to gamble it, and that's what I'm coming down. So if I lose it, okay, no big deal. And you lose it, but you still feel a little bad. You know, it doesn't ever feel good to lose money. But I never lost my shirt or my family over it. You know? But that was Ace Larson's problem. He had the gambling bug, and he was the type of gambler who was never satisfied with his winnings. And it was never enough. He always wanted more. And he was willing to give up the woman he loved in favor of his addiction. So fortunately, his friend Jimbo was the perfect match for his impulsiveness and the quick temper. And Jimbo was the calm voice of reason. And he knew he had to drastically jolt Ace back to reality by causing him to lose all the money he had originally helped him win. Now, if only Ace had listened to Jimbo and left the casino when his girlfriend Kitty begged him to, he would have gone home with a quarter of a million dollars. He would have gone home with $250,000. But the greed completely overtook him. Now, I'm figuring back in 1961, 62, $250,000 is really a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And Kitty wanted him to go home. The greed overtook him. So Jimbo had to take the drastic measures. He saw him getting out of control. Yeah, exactly.
That's the way gamblers are, yeah. I mean, you know, minimum wage probably back then was like maybe 50 cents, if anything. And, I mean, you know, you could get a good dinner for about $3. But, you know, that's the way the gambling life is. I mean, you want more, 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 more. And in the end, you lose it all. You lose your family, your house, your friends, everything.
Everything. And you're never satisfied. They always want more. And you would think, and back in 1962, $250,000, right, Robert? $250,000
mm-hmm.
Would all of us have been happy with that? That's like what a millionaire today, that's what a millionaire thinks is a lot of money. This is wonderful, you know, and he got out of control. And he was running around with a bimbo cigarette girl, and then he lost it all in the end. So I think the moral here is that money can't really buy happiness, and it can't take the place of true love. You know, I've got to say, my problems with this episode were, they're in the casino, right? They're sitting there, they're standing there in the casino at the craps table, the craps table and the roulette table, and they're standing there in front of everybody, and talking in a perfect, like I'm talking to you now, right? Say, oh, Jimbo and I have a system. You tell me what casino is going to let somebody say, Jimbo and I have a system, and not start to watch them very carefully and not even take them in and question them. And the other thing that drove me crazy is they're talking in front of Kitty the whole time in the room, outside of the room, talking, you know, and Jimbo saying, oh, I have a headache, I can't go on. Kitty never once questions, what's going on here? Why doesn't Kitty say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why is Jimbo worrying about having a headache? Why are you saying, oh, we have to stop now? Why are you saying we have a system? She questions nothing. The casino questions nothing. And
well,
you've got to
remember, in the Twilight Zone, the women were never that smart anyway, unfortunately.
Well, that's true.
A strong, smart character.
That is true. But the casino, why is the casino questioning anything? You know, they're standing there saying, oh, yeah, and here he is. Here's Jimbo with all these crazy looks on his face. Okay, now maybe the casino wouldn't question that. They just think, well, he's some kind of a, you know, challenged person here or whatever. But nobody in the room. Nobody in the room where he's with the gangster is seeing that Jimbo's making these faces every time that the dice are being rolled and saying, hey, what's wrong with your friend here? Does he have some kind of condition? I know that's the only thing I had a problem with. But anyway, we've seen the scenario before in different forms. You know, it's the old story of greed and power. Enough's never enough. Someone's given the power for wish for $1 million. They're not satisfied. They want $10 million. They're given the gift of seeing in the future, and they use it for selfish money-grubbing purposes. So, I don't know. The Prime Mover, it didn't end with anyone's death as some of the other episodes did, but it was still a familiar plot. And now, Buddy Ebsen, he's good in his role, playing Ace's nice guy, pal Jimbo. and he's a terrific actor. His talent, so I thought, were wasted in this episode, but he went on to better things, you know. He spent Bobby mentioned in his original review, spent most of the episode twitching his face, sweating his eyes. So I'm glad he went on to bigger and better things on Beverly Hillbillies and Barnaby Jones. And one last thing I have to say, although Charles Beaumont is credited as the writer of the story, he actually bought this story from George Clayton Johnson, whose name never showed up. It never showed up in the credits. But Beaumont added a love interest, the woman Kitty, for Ace, and that person was not in Johnson's original story. And one other note of interest is that the stock footage used in the car crash scene was taken from the movie Thunder Road, starring Robert Mitchum. Shows up at the end of the movie when Mitchum is electrocuted. So I liked this episode. I liked it better than Most Unusual Camera, but I didn't like it as much as I liked The Fever. It's not a horrible story. The ending's so-so, but I will give it a 2.5, maybe mostly for Buddy Ebsen, because I love Buddy Ebsen. So I'm giving it a 2.5 above average rating. And Robert, I'm turning it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, Buddy Ebsen's one of my favorite actors, too, and I thought he did a pretty good job with what he was given in the story. One of the things I mentioned when I did my review was he was very much a Forrest Gump type character almost. The way he acted, I wouldn't say he was a Rain Man, more of a Forrest Gump character in this one. The one thing I would have wished for the story was a background, a little bit of a background. Unfortunately, we don't get that. Here again, only 22 to 25 minutes when you're trying to do a story, so you don't really have that much time to do stuff. And of course, as Lynn brought up, I felt that same way too about why it wasn't security alerted to all of a sudden all this winning that he was doing, because in modern day, security would be right on top of that. But I guess back in the 60s, things must have been laxed the way it was portrayed in this story. When I was watching this, it reminded me of a lot of TV shows and movies. One of the things that it did remind me of was the John Travolta character. And that was another one that, the Buddy Ebsen kind of reminded me of in the movie Phenomenon, came out in 96. Powder is another one in 95 that also reminded me of that. Getting back to what I was saying, the background wise, first of all, it would have been nice to know, was he an alien that came to this planet, and because of political strife, or maybe Doom World as kind of a Superman type thing, was trying to fit into human society like the Martians did, or the Martian did in the Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up episode? Or is it he is human and maybe some kind of experiment or maybe meteor or something that happened, as I said, what phenomenon gave him the power, the ability to move things? So, some kind of interesting theories, and who this jumbo character was. I would have liked to know a little bit more of that, but here again, time limits, you can't go too much into that.
He said that he had this ability since he was a child. Do you think when you think of Superman came to Earth as a child as a baby,
yeah,
as an infant. Do you think that's that could have been a possibility, that maybe he came to this Earth as an alien child?
Right.
That could have been a possibility.
Yeah, it is a possibility.
Yeah.
But there's no background.
That would have been an interesting
list. There's no background, nothing to say that. It would have been like, a little flashback or something would have.
If it was like maybe an hour long episode, maybe they could have gone into that.
This would have fitted in the season 4. Definitely this could have probably fit in there, where they could have fleshed this. This is another one, and we mentioned it with past shows, how they needed to flesh some of these episodes out.
Sure.
This was one that really needed to be fleshed out a little bit more, yeah. So.
Yeah. definitely.
And almost like the Firestarter character, I mentioned that in a couple of episodes we've done where the Drew Barrymore character.
Drew Barrymore, yeah.
Inherited the power from her parents in that movie, from the father and mother, because they were part of the experiment, and it was passed on to the child. So,
it would have been interesting to know if he had actually gotten this from his parents or his parents had any psychic abilities at all.
Yeah, like I said, it also reminds me from The Shadow, Scanners with Michael Ironside, the second pilot to the original Star Trek called Where No Man Has Gone Before, X-Files, Fringe. I mean, you can name a bunch of these that would fit, into this story. So I gave it a 2 out of 5. A 2.5 out of 5. I thought it was above average. Acting was pretty good. Also, the slot machine in the fever was in this episode as well. Rod and them like to reuse props over and over again.
Oh, yeah, yes. Uh-huh.
It just didn't say, it didn't talk. So,
hey, did you notice that the music, some of the music was the same too?
Yeah.
Some of the music from the fever.
Some of the stock music's reused.
Yeah, exactly. They use the, and some of the music from the fever was the same as the music used in this one. And I noticed it right away because it reminded me of the fever. So I thought, mm-hmm. This is typical Rod, using the same stuff. And that's cool. That's a way to save money. Very frugal man. Well, not him, but CBS. CBS was very frugal.
This was a very active review on the boards because one of the things we talked about was the security issue of the gambling establishments. And also one of the things we mentioned too was about Buddy Epson. And I brought up the thing about the Wizard of Oz, how he was cast as the Tin Man only to lose it because of what happened with him with the aluminum powder. So I got a little clip of that. I'll go ahead and play. And it's narrated by Lansbury.
Murder, she wrote.
Judy Garland dances with another veteran of the theater, 30-year-old Buddy Epson. He has been under contract to MGM for 4 years and doesn't mind at all when he is switched from the Scarecrow to the Tin Man. But his dream assignment turns into a nightmare. They put aluminum dust all over my makeup, recalls Epson, and this aluminum dust got into the air and pretty soon my lungs were coated with it. One night I took a breath and nothing happened. They got an ambulance for me and got me down to the hospital. While Epson begins months of recuperation from his near-fatal illness, MGM announces he will be replaced. With no further explanation, Epson considers this as the worst personal and professional disaster he ever endured. Epson's replacement is Broadway and movie star Jack Haley. On loan from 20th Century Fox, he knows nothing of Epson's calamity, but Haley's makeup has been quietly changed from aluminum powder to aluminum paste.
And I was sad they couldn't figure that out beforehand, and, it was very, like I said, tragic what happened with Buddy Epson.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a shame that they couldn't just change they changed it for Jack Haley, right? Why couldn't they just change it and bring him back and say, okay, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have used this. We changed it now. We're going to bring you back. I mean, it just blow him off like that. Horrible.
Well, as Angela said, that it took months for him to recuperate. And when you're on a filming schedule, you got, and it costs money each day or time you lose. So, time is money, the old adage goes. So that's
they couldn't. Well, I understand that. Yeah, they couldn't lose all that time. Yeah. Makes sense.
The clips that I got, the first one is from the Doctor Who, The Planet of the Spiders, which is the last episode for that current doctor, which was the third doctor, played by John Pertwee. It was his last story, and it involves the beginning of a gentleman that they bring back to unit and find out that he has psychic ability. Now, when you hear something drop in the background because of it being visual, it's a tray that, like a tray that holds your cups and plates and stuff, that drops. So here's that clip.
I assure you that I shall tell nobody that you are really a very powerful clairvoyant.
I beg your pardon.
That's your real secret, isn't it?
Why ever should you think that?
You made a couple of mistakes last night, Professor. You gave the answer before your assistant had uttered a word.
Oh. It's happening more and more. I don't want it to. I was quite happy as a performer, Doctor, but I seem to be developing this power. I hate it. Things I can make happen.
But physical manifestations? Psychokinesis, for example?
Well, yes.
Well, that's remarkable.
Would you mind explaining?
Psychokinesis? Moving things by the power of the mind.
A very rarely developed faculty in Homo sapiens. Professor, Mr. Clegg, would you give us a demonstration?
Well,
please.
Very well. I can't keep it up.
You ought to use that in your act.
And lose my sanity would be a poor exchange.
So there is an example of telekinesis, of moving things with your mind, from that story there.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The one that I brought up that we were talking about was Phenomenon with John Travolta, about kind of here again, Travolta played kind of a Forrest Gump type character in this one where... you know, he's not a smart man. He's, I think he was an auto repair man.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Tow truck driver.
Yeah.
Yep, and he acquired a power telekinesis as well. So here's that trailer.
I always said George Malley has something extra to offer this world. I said that the day I circumcised you.
Happy birthday, George.
Happy birthday, buddy.
This is great.
37.
Anybody see that? That light? There was a noise. Did you hear it?
The man's inebriated.
I'm not drunk.
Can't sleep. Can you?
What's happening to you, George?
Lately, things have been so clear to me. Just understand quicker.
I just can't stop feeding myself. I read two, three books a day.
Ever since the sighting.
Roger, it was a damn light.
Imagine doing what others only dream of.
Uma coisa para ficar melhor.
George Malley, you learned the Portuguese language in 20 minutes?
Not all of it.
Experiencing what others can't understand.
And I'm trying to tell you that I think that there's an earthquake coming.
He's nice, isn't he?
Yeah, but he thinks he saw a UFO and he thinks he can predict earthquakes.
And believing what you never thought possible.
Ooh. Let me see just one more time.
It's a damn mistake is what it is. It was supposed to happen to someone smart, but it didn't happen to me.
They're watching me so closely. I think I scare them.
You're not alone. People have been doing astounding things, things we can't explain.
Can't they just look in his eyes and see who he is? Is it close enough?
You tell me.
It's pretty close.
What do you mean by genius?
He's basically off the chart. I don't think he's testable.
If you think that's something, you should see him move stuff with his brain.
Would you, love me the rest of my life?
No. I'm gonna love you for the rest of mine.
going on, George?
I don't know.
And that was from the movie Phenomenon. A very popular song came out of there called Change the World, performed by Eric Clapton. So,
oh, yeah. I remember that.
Big popular song
great
that came
song.
Out of that.
Yeah.
And then finally, as a lot of people know, the Star Trek, the original, all got a remaster done on the first three seasons of the original series. And as maybe I imagine a lot of people know, that the Cage was the original pilot, but the network suits wasn't happy with it, so they told Roddenberry to redo it. So you get Where No Man Has Gone Before, which is the first episode of the series, has Sally Kellerman in it, and also you get kind of a different doctor, because the doctor, I believe, DeForest Kelly doesn't come till the second episode of the series. So
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the trailer for that.
At the edge of the known universe.
Leaving the galaxy, Mr. Mitchell.
Where no man has gone before.
All decks stand by.
There is a force.
What's happening to me?
That will give one man.
I just thought of making it happen, and it does.
Power beyond imagination.
You've been testing your ability to take over the Enterprise.
Damage reports.
9 dead.
I just keep getting stronger.
Kill Mitchell while you still can.
But how do you kill a god?
Pray to me, Captain.
Star Trek.
Yeah, that was, I would say, probably a better episode than The Cage. I think The Cage was okay, but then they split it into The Menagerie, Part 1 and 2. So they do eventually get to reuse the first pilot, but later on in the series. So,
yeah.
And that is it. That is it for me. I'm 2.5 out of 5, and I'll pass it on to Bobby.
Hey.
Thank you, Robert. I don't know what to say about this. Everybody's already said what I was going to say. Mediocre is the word I would use for this episode. It's really very average, very unexciting. Nothing much happens in it that's worth getting excited about. It's pretty predictable from the minute it starts. And I would say this, all fiction, whether it's science fiction or not, requires a certain amount of suspension of disbelief on the part of the person watching it or reading it in order to enjoy it. But this episode requires something different, and that's suspension of intelligence, because it's really pretty stupid when you get right down to it. As has already been mentioned by Lynn, it's completely idiotic to think that a casino would allow anybody to walk around and win so much money without questioning how they were doing it. And not only are ignoring the fact that they're winning everything, they appear to be delighted that they are. It's absolutely ludicrous. So that part of it just looks too silly. And then everybody also knows that if you invite professional gamblers up to your hotel room and you take them for everything they're worth, they're just going to sit there quietly and watch you do it. They're not going to pull out a gun and stick it in your face or anything and wonder what it is you're doing. So that part looks ridiculous, too. I know it's only a story on the Twilight Zone, but, you know, really, I mean, you can go too far with that kind of thing. And that, I think, really hurts the story. Somebody should have questioned something. It just doesn't make any sense. You just go in there and you win and win and win. Plus, I don't like the fact that, and I've railed against this before, we give the Twilight Zone a pass on the fact that they really repeat storylines way too often. As good a writer as Matheson was, whether he bought the story from somebody else or not, this business about going to the same theme again and again and again.
Charles Beaumont.
That's what I meant to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Going to the same theme again and again and again, it just gets boring after a while. This episode goes back not only to the fever, but also the one about the couple and that pawn shop with the genie that pops out of the bottle.
The bottle one, yeah.
Yeah, I forget the name of that.
The man in the bottle.
And it's the same kind of story. Also, Serling and his writers are really kind of obsessed with bad behavior on the part of humans. And story after story after story, it's the same old thing. People either come into money or come into fame or come into something, and they abuse it. They don't know how to treated properly. They don't know. They go for too much, and they end up regretting it. So you can see that coming every time. You know that it's going to go there eventually. So I just wish they would stop doing this. This story actually, Robert already mentioned it briefly in his review. As far as the being in Las Vegas, was realized much better about 27 years later in the movie Rain Man. Same kind of thing there with Tom Cruise using his brother's ability to win a lot of money. But that's a whole different story. That's a fully realized film, and you really care about the characters here. You care about Raymond and the fact that he's being used and things like that. They eventually come to love each other and realize they're not just use each other. This story is just about two people don't even know, and one guy sees that the other guy has some special power, decides to make a lot of money off of it. So I can't really get too excited about it. Buddy Epson is playing the same part he always played throughout his career. Oh, he's very laid back, very quiet, just kind of, he sure wasn't required to do much in this episode, except twitch his nose or, he may have been better being in Bewitched than he was in this particular episode of The Twilight Zone, rolling his eyes, twitching his face, things like that. He wasn't required to do a whole lot. But it's better episodes than the last few that we reviewed on this show. So it at least kept me awake. But I don't get a whole lot out of it. The thing that really amazes me is that all these characters, when they do come into money, are not that just a certain amount of money. I mean, I've been to Atlantic City many, many times. Gambler, I never got anything out of gambling. Never really did anything for me. You know, I'm just not fascinated by it. It was nice to be there. I'd rather go to Atlantic City and see a show, go to Las Vegas and see shows than actually stand and gamble all day and lose money. But that's me. I'm just never, even if I had the money to gamble, I seriously doubt that I would throw it all away. If I was as lucky as this guy or anybody to go to any gambling mecca and win thousands of dollars, I really think, I know it's easy for me to say this, but I would just leave. I would just go home. Because I think if you go home with any kind of amount of money at all, you're lucky. Why stand there and just go? There's too much greed going on. So this episode is just, the problem with it, I think, is that it's just 25 minutes. You really don't get to know people that well or really care about them. So I didn't really care much whether they won any money or not, or whether they got away with it. But I think the scenes, being Clark's character is throwing money around in the casino like an idiot. He's giving out $1,000 tips, and he's just, it's absurd. You're going to win money, and what are you going to do? Throw it all away by handing money to everybody you see?
How about carrying the money out in the box?
Well, that's absurd. I wasn't aware that casinos gave you cash.
They give you a check. Then they carry it out in the boxes.
As many times as I've been in a casino, I've never seen people walking around with boxes of cash.
They give me a damn check. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what they did in 1962, but as far as I know, they give you a check. You don't bring a box of money to your car.
Well, I know one thing. You won't have it for long because somebody's going to kill you for it. You can bet on that.
Insane.
So it's just, it's okay. It's an okay episode, but it's not terribly compelling. I think the problem is trying to tell too deep a story in too little time, because when I get something out of a story, I need to know the characters and I need to care something about them. But I don't much care for these
Bobby,
two. Yeah,
would you feel better if this was carried over to season 4 where it had a chance to maybe look at Jimbo and see his background?
You mean an hour-long episode? No, I hate the hour-long episodes. The hour-long episodes, there's only one that I really like. The rest of them really left me cold.
Oh, come on. There's at least two or three that you like.
Really? That's news to me. I only like the one where the guy started taking his instructions from Hitler. I like that one. I forget the name.
You'll know when we get to them. There's two or three that you like.
I don't know.
Devil, like I said, is the one I liked out of season 4. So.
Which one?
Printer's Devil.
Printer's Devil. There are two or three decent ones. There may be four decent ones in season 4. But you know what? You said something about, and I agree with you 100%, Bobby, that Most of the episodes show people getting riches and getting something given to them, looking at gift horse in the mouth, and, you know, abusing any power, any money, anything that they get. But there are a few episodes here and there where they are given something good and they don't want it. Like, you have to figure Mr. Beavis, that terrible episode. But Mr. Beavis was given a chance to have a great job and have money and all kinds of stuff. And he said, I don't want this. I like my old car. I like my crappy apartment. I like. And so there you got.
Well, he was a moron anyway.
He was a moron. Yeah, he was a complete idiot. He had a great. He was giving him a great job, a promotion, a wonderful apartment, a wonderful car, a sports car. But he wanted his old Rickenbacker, you know. And so you got that episode. And then you have one that's coming up shortly, which I won't talk about now. But it's the one with Carol Burnett, where she gets things better than she has, and she doesn't want them. She wants her old life back. So they're not all that way. But I will agree with you, Bobby, that the majority of the people who get the goods want more than what they get. It's like, not good enough, I want more.
Well, the only thing I take from that, then, is that Serling and his writers have no faith in human nature at all. You either give somebody everything they want and they abuse it, or you give them what they don't really want and they're not interested. There's got to be a middle ground somewhere. I'd like to see somebody get what they need and be happy with it and live their life happily.
And that would be in the episode What You Need.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Or Ernest Truex gave everybody what they need and they didn't need anything more than that. Yeah.
Well, you got to remember, Serling carried that over to Night Gallery as well. You think that got any better those two seasons he did that?
Oh, no. No, yeah, it was the same situation. It was the same situation.
Well, it can be kind of cynical at times, just acting as if it doesn't matter what you do for humans, they'll screw it up somehow, either with greed or disinterest or something. And I don't know. There must be some people in the world. Donald Trump seems perfectly happy being a millionaire. And he didn't throw his money away. So it must be possible to get money and live a wonderful life.
You don't really know how happy he is. He's got a lot of money.
Oh, really? He doesn't seem too sad to me.
Well, you don't. Yeah, but you don't really know him, do you? I mean, you know, he comes across that way. He comes across that way and for the media. But, you know, is he really happy? I mean, yeah, he's got a lot of money. He can buy whatever he wants, but... Is he lonely? Do his children hate him? I don't know. You don't know. You just don't know. Does he have a lot of enemies? Maybe he has a lot of enemies.
Speaking of Donald Trump, I think all this controversy currently over the national debt in Congress, they always just call up Donald Trump and ask him to pay it. And
you
that'll take care of it. We won't have to worry about it anymore.
You know what? I decided I'm going to pay it off. I'm going to pay it off because I am sick and tired of all this nonsense. It's just, you know, they're obsessing. They're obsessing over this. The only thing that's on the news, I'll pay it off this week.
But the news media loves it. You know that. They love it. They get to put a clock on the screen and go, oh, my God, 3 days to go. Oh, my God, 2 days to go. Oh, 1 day to go. They love every minute of it. They don't want to see it end. They love it.
Yeah,
they love it.
But someone
has to put
a clock on the screen and tell people it's the end of the world. They've been waiting for that for a long time. So I think they're having a ball with it. Anyway, my prediction on that is they'll solve the whole thing right before the last minute because they value their jobs too much, I'm afraid. They'll do what they have to do. Anyway,
Robert,
getting back to
I was going to say, Robert, you and I should pay off the national debt this week. The three of us.
Yeah, we'll have the gamblers do that. All you gamblers out there, go ahead and send your money to Washington and pay off the debt.
Just don't pay it. Just tell them we're not paying it, and that's the way it goes. What are they going to do about it? At any rate, getting back to this episode, I gave it a 2. I must have been in a good mood that day because I don't know that it deserves a 2. By the way, at IMDb, it gets a 7 out of 10, which I think is outrageous. A 7 out of 10. I mean, there's not a lot of reviews there, but everybody thought it was just absolutely wonderful. I think I could pick some other episodes that deserve a 7 out of 10. So it's a 2. It's all right. Kept me awake, but I don't know.
Well,
I'm not as cynical as we are.
Yeah, I would just say I would have paid some of the money. I'll tell you what, I would have gone home when that box was only half filled. I would have said, well, the box is almost filled. Let's go home. Right there.
Well, like I said, it's not. I didn't think it was as bad as Most Unusual Camera, which is a bunch of people who, you know, got something, you know, predicting the future, and they were. Now that episode was just idiotic, but I liked very much. I liked The Fever, so I didn't think this was as good as The Fever. So I'm going in between. I'm giving it 2.5. Wasn't as good, but it was better than some. So I'm giving it 2.5.
Alrighty, that's
well. Looking at my past reviews, I gave pretty much the next ones coming up all 2.5, except for one, I give a 3. But yeah, it's next few coming up.
Yeah.
It felt average to me.
All right, cool. Well, now what do we have 2 weeks from now? We've got the long distance call, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
As I know, yeah.
Yeah, and that's on the 13th of August. Am I right, Robert?
Yep, you are correct. And that's going to be an interesting one to talk about because a lot of people felt very different than what I felt about Long Distance Call. But we can talk about that next time.
Yeah, exactly. So that is 2 weeks from now on the 13th of August. And Long Distance Call starring, I'd say, Billy Mummy. But I know he pronounces it Billy Mummy, but my whole life I've known him as Billy Mummy, so I don't know what's right. But anyway,
well, he's Bill now, so.
Yeah, he's
when
Bill.
When we grow up, we want to lose those kid names and, you know,
Donny
except for
Austin.
Butch. I think
yes,
he still
Donny
calls
Austin.
Himself Butch Patrick.
Exactly. Donny Austin, Bobby Sherman. Yeah, okay. Davy Jones. Well, Davy Jones still goes by Davy Jones, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's... Yes, it's Bill Mummy, whatever his name
Mummy,
is.
Mummy, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 2 weeks from now on the 13th, and we will see everyone then. So in the meantime, have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.